All parents dream that their children will feel close with one another, but it's common for brothers and sisters to fight and bicker as kids. Often, sibling rivalry starts even before the second child is born and continues as kids grow and compete for everything from toys to attention, and as they transition from one developmental stage to another. How can parents know when to get involved, and what are steps you can take to promote peace and help your kids survive their sibling rivalry? I'm Dr. Deborah Pontillo, and this is Parent Savers, Episode 69.
Faster than a speeding toddler.
Sit still for just a minute.
Can soothe boo-boos with a gentle kiss.
Would you get down from there?
Able to clean poopy bottoms in a single swipe.
Oh, what did you eat?
Turning frazzled mommies and daddies into procreators of peace and harmony.
Ah, quit touching me.
It's Parent Savers, empowering new parents everywhere.
Welcome back, everyone, to Parent Savers, broadcasting from the Birth Education Center of San Diego. Parent Savers is your weekly online, on-the-go support group for parents of newborns, infants, and toddlers. I'm your host, John Arreal. I've also got producer Erin here in studio.
Hello, hello.
And she is manning the Facebook and Twitter feeds. We tape one Saturday a month, and we love to get your live participation when we do tape. So how can folks participate, Erin?
Well, first of all, you can check out our Facebook page, Parent Savers, and also you can look for us on the Twitter. You can follow me at OG Mamacita, or you can follow us at hashtag Parent Savers VP, and I will be posting questions and asking for comments and responses for our podcast.
Nice. We love how this is building. In our last episode, we had a listener question, and hopefully we'll see if we can get a couple for this one as well. And definitely moving forward for our future tapings, follow those pages, and you can participate in the conversation. Sunny's also in studio with us, and I'm only introducing her, and I'll loop her in later, because we are talking about sibling rivalry, and she has some siblings, and from what I've heard from talking to her, they are rivals sometimes. So she may be participating as well. And thanks so much to all of you guys for listening, especially those loyal listeners who've joined the Parent Savers Club. Our members get all our archived episodes, bonus content after each new show, with special giveaways and discounts, and more. You can also subscribe to our monthly Parent Savers newsletter for a chance to win a membership to our club each month. The newsletter itself is free, keeps you up to date on what we're doing. And another way for you to stay connected is by downloading our free Parent Savers app, available in the Android and iTunes marketplace. All right, we got the announcements out of the way, but let's go around. We've got a lot of folks in the room talking about this topic, and I think a lot of you guys will probably be interested in it as well. So let's talk about who we are, who's at the table, and, you know, how our kids are, and maybe if we think they're sibling rivals. So, Lori, you want to go first?
Yeah, I'm Lori Babb. I guide people in yoga, meditation, and consciousness development. And I'm 41, and I have two boys, 2.5 and 5.5, and they definitely exhibit rivalry.
And I'm Cecile Neri. I'm a full-time stay-at-home mom to three kids. I have a 7-year-old daughter, a 6-year-old daughter, and a 3.5-year-old son. And there is definitely rivalry going on in my household.
This is John, and we have a 6-year-old boy, a 4-year-old boy, and a 2-year-old boy. And yeah, people always ask if they get along. So yeah, they get along great, except when they don't. And that's the sibling rivalry part.
I'm Erin Esteves, and I am the OG Mamacita, officially a geriatric mom. I have one boy, Cash. He's going to be 2 this fall, and I am 43, and I only have sibling rivalry amongst my own siblings.
Nice. Yeah, Sunny, go ahead.
Hello, everyone. I'm Sunny. I'm the host and producer of Parent Savers' sister show, Preggy Pals. I am pregnant myself. Definitely not my first pregnancy. I have 2 little boys at home, Sayer, who is 3, Urban, who is 15 months, and I'm pregnant with identical twin girls. So
you have sibling rivalry in your tummy. Whoa. Right now.
I know, maybe. You know, what's funny is they can feel each other, and I see them on the ultrasound kind of like punching and kicking already. Yeah. I'm like, oh, no, please, Lord.
At least they're not like sharks where they have to eat each other. You know, where only one survives.
Yeah, let's hope not.
Right. Dr. Pontillo?
Hi, I'm Dr. Deborah Pontillo. I'm a child psychologist in San Diego, California. I'm from www.howtohelpmychild.com, and I'm a mother of 2. I've got a 6-year-old daughter and a 2-year-old son, and look, I'm not saying anything unique in this room. They love each other and they hate each other, yeah. So what are you going to do?
From time to time here on Parent Savers, we review apps that are of use to parents. And today we're going to be looking at one called Artkive, which is available on the iTunes Store for free, Artkive. And what this app does is it provides a way for you to take snapshots of the art that your kid does and easily kind of file it together, and also offers a way to share it. So once you kind of log on for the first time, you go ahead and you enter your family information, your kids' names. You can enter how old they are or what grade they are in. And then once you set them up, you can also set up the email addresses for who you might like to be sharing with. And then after that, you can either take stuff that you've already taken pictures of or go right through the app and take pictures of the art. And the cool thing that it does is it makes it easy to, you know, quickly with a few button pushes and some information say, okay, this is my oldest kid's. He did it in July of 2013. And here's a little note about it if I want to write a note about it. And then what it does is after you categorize it, it'll file it for you. So that, you know, if you take a bunch of these pictures, you can easily access them by kid, by age, that type of thing.
Does it store it on your phone or in a cloud, or where does it go?
It stores it on the cloud for archive, but okay. It also does store it on your picture roll as well.
So if you lose your camera, it's still in the cloud somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So it's still keeping it. You know, it's one of those things where actually I started doing this a couple years ago, taking pictures of all the art, because you get it and then you feel guilty that, like, you know, my wife, her filing system was straight to the trash sometimes, and I'd be like, oh, I feel kind of guilty because they're so proud of it.
Yeah.
And so you want to take pictures of it, but we have so many pictures already.
Yes.
So now just mixed in with all of these pictures that we have on our computer or our hard drive or wherever you keep them are these random pictures of the art too.
Uh-huh.
And the trick is, what do you do with them? So this app kind of helps solve that problem.
Well, what I really like about the app is that you can print up a book.
Right.
Because, okay, like, frankly, you know, first of all, you think, oh, I can do Shutterfly, I could do all, you know, Flickr, I can use all these things. But really, honestly, I mean, I started a book on Cache last year and never finished it. So I like this because it keeps it all condensed into one spot.
Right.
And
sort of funny, though, that you have to, in order to make a book of our kids' art, we feel like we have to take a picture of it to put it on our phone to then make a book about it.
Well, because, you know,
it's the modern world.
Yeah, the clutter. We think, this piece of paper. No more paper. Well,
plus,
really,
they're different sizes,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, what are you going to do with it? How many boxes, really?
Standardized.
Oh, our attic is full. My husband said it's a fire hazard up there. You could start a bonfire in our attic.
That's what I was going to say, fire hazard.
So this app is pretty cool. It helps you do a lot of different things. It's not perfect. I think that the interface is a little bit clunky sometimes, and as far as like inputting things or sharing things, you can connect it to Facebook, you can easily print, you can take pictures from inside the app. I mean, overall, I think it is pretty useful, and I think it solves a problem that many parents face. All right, so Archive gets a thumbs up from Parent Savers, so check it out. We'll have a link on the page.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
Today's topic on Parent Savers is sibling rivalry. We're talking with Dr. Deborah Pontillo, who's going to tell us about when it starts, how to deal with it, and more. Thanks for joining us again, Dr. Pontillo.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, this is actually a continuation of our previous episode where we were talking about preparing for another baby. And so kind of a natural kind of thing that happens afterwards, and maybe even while it's still, while you're still expecting another kid, is that sibling rivalry can start. So, you know, we've all kind of experienced, as we said when we were going around, would you say that sibling rivalry is inevitable?
I think it's inevitable in the sense that in any human relationship, whether it's, you know, mother and child, siblings, or husband and wife, you know, we all know that in human relationships, we don't get along 100% of the time. This is part of, you know, everyone's going to have conflict, everyone's going to have disagreements, and that's part of just learning how to get along. So from that standpoint, yeah, it's inevitable.
Right, yeah. I think you talk to almost any parent, and they're like, yeah, the kids are having trouble getting along, or You know, so when does it start, though? When have you, how, what's the earliest you've maybe seen it start, or when can it start?
Well, I think the feeling of a child, you know, not having good feelings about a new sibling can start as early as knowing that there's another baby on the way.
Right.
You know, there's the feeling of being threatened. There's a feeling of competition. You know, the older the child is, there can be anticipation of how the future might be for them. So that can start at a very early age. And, of course, that looks very different than a 6-year-old and 11-year-old. You know, arguing, but it can start pretty early.
And so from a young age, how can it manifest itself?
Well, I think, you know, you've probably all seen this, but if you have an 8 or 9 month old and his or her mother goes and picks up another friend's infant and cuddles that infant, how does the 8 or 9 month old like that? Not too well. So there's already the realization that that's my mommy and, you know, I'm feeling threatened. I'm not feeling good. So that can start very, very young.
Right. And lead to tantrums and things like that. So then how does it change? Let's talk about, you know, from a developmental standpoint. And we'll go start from the younger as it gets a little bit older.
Sure.
As to how kids are dealing with it. And even as they get into their early tween years and stuff.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think, you know, the easiest way to think about it is the under twos. I mean, it's a very much an emotional reaction, territorial reaction. Kids under two have not yet learned how to share. And they're not developmentally ready to learn how to share. And that's appropriate for them. So to have this other person, it's often a very self-centered viewpoint, you know, what's interfering with my needs, with my emotional needs, with my physical property, that's my toy, leave it alone. So it's a very kind of narcissistic, but a developmentally appropriate way of looking at things.
I think Dr. Karp calls them little cavemen.
Yeah, right? Like
they're mine, not like they maybe know mine, and that's how they're looking at things.
Right, so it's very much a self-centered viewpoint, and that can continue, you know, to 2, 2.5 until the development of, you know, looking at things from other people's viewpoints starts to take hold. And then once that happens, then you've got the ability to begin to reason with another child, reason with your child about having another sibling. It doesn't necessarily mean they want to see it from your perspective, but they are able to. And that's kind of your window in a little bit. But then again, you know, once you get into older kids, and we're talking about 4, 5, and 6, you know, it can be comparisons. They're very much into fairness and equality. So what's fair, what's not fair, I don't have to, he has to, but she doesn't. And you have to start explaining to them, you know, ages mean different expectations, and fair does not always mean equal. And so that can look different than what a toddler is, it becomes a new sibling.
That's perfect, because we got a tweet from Bobby at La Paz, and he was wondering about how you teach sharing to a toddler. As far as sibling rivalry is going, he's saying that they have issues with sharing.
Sharing is hard to teach under age 2 just because developmentally it requires a certain level of cognitive development and flexibility. Now, it doesn't mean you can't do it, but it means you have to have your expectations a little bit different than when you're teaching a 4-year-old how to share. So, for example, you know, you can create different boxes. You know, be very concrete. This box is for your toy only. That everything that is in that box is all yours. Anything in box number 2 is something that baby can touch and you can touch. And when baby is touching it, you need to wait your turn. And when you're touching it, baby waits baby's turn. Mm-hmm. And then baby's box, that's all for baby. And toddlers can understand that because it's very concrete and very visual.
That's good. I like that one. Yes.
One of the phrases our 2-year-old has picked up was "had it pursed," because his brothers will be like, "I had it first. I had it first." And we put a lot of pressure on them to, like, you know, share with him. But he pretty quickly has learned that if he has something and he's mad, he can come up and see, "I had it pursed. Had it pursed."
It's important. You can show you how motivation can really get language development moving really quick.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, I guess let's continue with the developmental stages.
Okay.
And you were talking about, I think you were in like the 4-year-old.
The 4 or 5 range. Sort of fairness, equality, and sort of comparisons. You know, and as you get older, you know, older children, now we're talking about, you know, 8 and above, they might have, you know, more of an independence and more of a sort of that nurturing for a much younger sibling. But there can also be a lot of resentment. You know, I don't want to have to take care. I don't want to have the burden. I, you know, and that can be rivalry in and of itself, because there's a little bit of, you know, age-appropriate independence and maybe a little bit of age-appropriate lack of willingness to participate maybe in the way that a younger child might just do because mommy said so. So that can change.
And so rivalry doesn't, it's like, it doesn't mean that they're hitting or they're yelling at each other. There's other ways, other things
right.
that it can manifest itself.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. And what I do want to get across to families is, you know, a lot of families that I see come to me for sibling rivalry issues, and the kids have been really violent and physically violent. I think you had kind of talked yeah. about that a little bit. And that is definitely not a normal part of sibling rivalry.
Right.
If yeah, I can just ahead, jump in, I got another perfect comment from Andrea Libinski. She's mm-hmm. saying that her first child actually humped the second child.
Humped?
Is that yeah, she said she climbed onto the couch and sort of humped the baby.
Like sort a of. Show of dominance and then, or something.
Exactly, she said, like a dog.
Like dogs do. Yeah.
Patted the kid's head and got off the couch.
That is interesting. Well, I know.
Something she's seen.
Maybe she's been to the zoo. To it, yeah.
Well, and I mean, but we do have, because our cousins, where, you know, the older one, you know, would like, I think he got violent with the baby, like when it came, that he, you know, would physically act out towards it, or you just get so mad and full of rage with it. And that's what you're saying isn't necessarily normal.
No, absolutely not. And, you know, I think, you know, there's a big difference between aggressive behavior if a 2.5 or, toddler, you know, a little baby crawls up and takes the toy or knocks down the tower as to sort of swat. That's one thing. But
right.
to violence towards, aggression towards an infant or even, you know, two school-aged children showing physical aggression on a regular basis is not. Is
that's
not.
Even beyond what we're talking about. And,
right.
and that's the type of behavior that, you know, what kind of help can people get for that? Can they?
Well, I think, you know, right away you need to consult with a specialist like your school psychologist or child psychologist because, you know, there's a fine line between sibling rivalry and sibling abuse. A lot of families think, I've got boys, they're rough, they're pelting each other in the head. You know, I think my rule of thumb is use the classroom model. So if you're a school teacher in a school, would this be tolerated in your classroom? And if the answer is no, then don't tolerate it in your house.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
That's good. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. Well, what effect does gender have on, you know, sibling rivalry? Do you see differences between if it's an older sister as the oldest in the family versus an older brother?
So there actually they have done a little bit of research on this, not a whole lot because there's not a lot of funding for it. But what they have shown is, when there's an older sister, that older sister tends to be more nurturing with the baby. And that nurturing effect actually is greater the greater age gap between the older sister and the younger sibling. And whereas the older brothers may not be so involved in the nurturing and caretaking. And they also show that with same gender siblings that there often can be slightly more competition and comparisons, usually by the parents, though. This seems to be more of a parenting effect than necessarily it happens in isolation. But that just generally seems to happen because obviously interests are the same. My Legos, your Legos. My soccer team won this many games. Your soccer team won that many games. It's intuitive. Actually,
it's almost an issue beyond siblings that like we see with our kids.
You have three boys, right?
Yeah, three boys.
Yeah.
But comparing it with like, you know, we've had to tone back the rivalry, if you will, or the competition talk because it never ends well.
Right.
I know where this is going. Somebody's not going to win. And
right.
Someone's going to be sad.
Right.
Yeah. Well, all right. Let's take a break here. This is a good point. And then when we come back, let's talk about some ways that parents can help deal with the rivalry. Maybe knowing when to step in, when to just know what's natural. That
absolutely.
Kind of stuff. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Today we're talking about sibling rivalry with Dr. Deborah Pontillo here on Parent Savers. So how can parents know when to intervene with sibling rivalry and when to let it go? You know, what is natural and when is it like, I need to do something about this?
Well, I think, you know, my general rule of thumb is for children who are, you know, under the age of 5 or 6, they pretty well need supervision and you to intervene because you have to think about this. This is a real social skill. And they're developing their ability for social problem solving, social reasoning, and what we call social thinking, which is the ability to think outside of your own needs and to think about what your peer, or in this case, sibling, is thinking and how that affects your behavior. And kids under the age of 5 or 6, they really, when conflicts do arise, don't have a lot of skills to rely on to resolve those conflicts. So they do need coaching. And that doesn't mean you're intervening all the time. You know, sometimes maybe it's just keeping an ear out and hoping that it goes well. But when things start to go wrong, they do require parent intervention. I think when you read online, you probably come up with internet resources that say, let your kids handle it. I think what they're really talking more towards is the older school-aged children,
right,
who really should know better. I mean, these are kids who've been in school. They've been in playground conflicts. They've pretty well had the experience and the skills to resolve conflicts.
Right.
And you'd like to not jump in and hold their hand every single time.
Well, and it's not that I don't think kids can be expected to naturally have this instinct to negotiate and handle conflict.
No.
I mean, the instinct is the opposite, right? Pull
right.
hair, hit,
right.
kick, do whatever you can to
not
get your
fair.
Way.
Not fair, yeah.
So I think you do need to give them the skills and then know when to start stepping back to see if they're able to apply those skills.
Right, right. And I think even just hovering just to give them the praise about what they did right is huge, because I think a lot of this squabbling is for parent attention. So if you're there to just hover and just hear, hey, I love how you gave your sister blah, or you decided to give him or her a turn, that can go a long way too.
A tool that I learned recently through positive discipline, sort of a school of parenting, was to have a wheel of choice. And it could be in any kind of conflict situation, but you have made it up. It's something that you've made several choices of actions that you can take. I guess it could be a list too, but they do it as a wheel. Where, and I've tried to start using that with my 5.5-year-old, you know, okay, so what are your choices here? Or not even showing him that. Sometimes we just talk about them. So, okay, you can argue with him, you can yell at him, you can take the toy, you can't, what happens? You know, and this helping them to see this, you know, the natural consequences of,
right.
well, right, okay, go with that choice, you know, and then see how it works out, you know, and what are your other options too, you know. And then they start learning the costs and the benefits of certain choices.
What about if they argue about which choice?
Right. Well, you'd address, you know, self-responsibility. Yeah, it's true, right? They're not probably going to always agree on how to.
Well, I guess that's where some of the other comments that I've been getting on Facebook would come in, because people are like, oh, smack them, spank them like we all used to get. You know, and I said, how about something that's a little less violent and that won't land parents in jail? So,
right. Parents have to be, you know, especially careful about how they resolve conflict, because even just between husband and wife or partners,
right.
That the modeling goes a long way. And so if you get angry and frustrated and you yell, how do you think your kids are going to resolve their conflict?
Yeah, there are definitely times when I see our kids get frustrated and be like, oh man, is he acting like me or is he acting like my wife? Like, where is he learning that? Like, he's picking that out from somewhere.
Right.
Yeah. That's scary.
Yeah, but you know, these kids are going to, they find the craziest things to be rivals about, you know, and it really is, oh, well, let me see what he wants first, and then I'm going to make the choice because that. And, like, they think that we don't know what they're doing, but
something they normally hate, they all of a sudden love.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like my middle child, and it's funny because there's rivalry between my oldest daughter and my middle daughter, and then there's rivalry between my middle daughter and my youngest son, but not so much between my oldest and my youngest. She's very nurturing towards my my baby, and you know, sometimes she's seven, so you know, they do have their squabbles, but my middle daughter has it from both sides. And I do notice with what you said earlier to highlight when they do something good, and I think a lot of the times it's just them, they want my attention,
right?
And so when I give it to them, then I notice there's a shift in behavior and they are more open to sharing and being nicer to that sibling.
Exactly.
So I think a lot of the times it's not so much that they want to be better than that other person, it's just they want you to make them feel like, you know, to feel validated.
Be recognized
and
validated. Right. Absolutely.
Right. When I see the rivalry get up sometimes, I know that they're getting tired. Mm-hmm. So I'll say, okay, time for a story. We're all going to go lie down and read a story. Mm-hmm. And that usually works because it diverts, because they're just getting tired and frustrated and it's coming out that way.
Right. Yeah. Right.
I have some situations come up sometimes where I can really understand why both are frustrated and sometimes even think that, you know what, they're both kind of right. It's like, what do you do like to step in there when there's not like a clear, like, all right, you need to, there's not like a clear lesson, like, oh, you both kind of have, right? Or maybe that is the lesson.
That is the lesson. I think that's perfect because, you know, how often would this happen at work with a coworker or, you know, with your partner or spouse? You know, you can't, nothing's black and white in life. And so here's a situation where, gosh, you're both right. What are we going to do? And come back to that wheel situation.
Right.
What are our possibilities? You know, let's figure it out. Or if it's just frustration and they need to manage their frustration, you'll go to your corners. I think a lot of times we forget that kids need their own space, they call theirs, and their own, you know, that their own property and their own time. And maybe they just need to, you know, take a break and come back to it.
you have some parenting strategies to foster healthy relationships. So if you could tell us about that.
Right. Well, I think I spoke of one, which is major, which sounds like it's pretty simple, but I find a lot of families forget about it. And this, you can even do this even if your house is or is small, but kids really need their own space and their own stuff. So, you know, they need to have, you know, a room or a corner of the room that is truly theirs. And parents really need to be more very proactive about enforcing this, because, of course, that's a real, you know, a trick that kids love to get in each other's space. But it really has to be a family rule, just like no hitting. And it has to be enforced, because kids need to feel they have their own territory and they have what's theirs. They don't need to share everything. Some things are truly privately theirs and need to be respected. And that can help kids learn to share the other things, including the communal part of the house that's for everyone, but also the property and everything else, and be more flexible in that arena because they have that, you know, their own private Idaho, if you will. Yeah.
That's hard with an almost 2-year-old, though.
It is. It's very difficult. Uh-huh. And they're at an age where they're afraid to be alone. And so we have a tri-level. And so they're at an age where I can't just say, well, you go up to the third floor and you go down to the bottom floor. So we all kind of hang out on the middle level. And I try to say, well, why don't you go over there and read, and Bella, you can do your crafts over here. I can't just say, why don't you go upstairs and sit on your bed? Because, I'm scared. I want you to come with me. And obviously I can't because I have two others. And so that's kind of a challenge for me. And so we try to break up the living area as best as we can, but it's hard because I've got a 3.5 who won't sit still and he's in everybody's business.
But they might not need their space right now. You know, that's something that might come later, and for every child is different. You know, mm-hmm. your 7-year-old might be ready and your others may not be, mm-hmm. but still having their own stuff. Mm-hmm. For I have a 2.5-year-old at home, and he has his little penguin doll that's his, and his little, you know, truck and a plane, mm-hmm. and big sister just can't come grab it whenever she feels like it, and he may or may not get that or care even, but we put it in one drawer that's his drawer, and that's his toy box, and that's it, he doesn't want to go and spend time in his room alone like my six and a half-year-old does, right. But there's a sense of what's mine, and therefore there's a sense of the other things which are communal, and that kind of gives a healthy boundary to the house.
When I was a kid, I'm the baby of four. We all had to share things, but we each had our own seat, and we got to pick our own seat out. And so I had a red bean bag, and my older sister had a yellow bean bag, and we could take that bean bag wherever we wanted in the house, wherever everybody was hanging out, and that was your private bean bag.
Great idea.
My brother had one of those like foldy chairs, and I don't remember what my other sister had, but I sure knew what my beanbag looked like, I'll tell you.
And if anybody touched it, you had permission to...
yeah.
All forces necessary.
And we had talks about squatters' rights and everything, you know, so it was...
That's
it was
awesome. Do they still sell beanbags?
They do.
Yeah, we have one.
Still a thing?
We have one. Awesome.
Nice. Any other tips?
Yeah, I mean, so a lot of squabbles are going to be around whose turn is whose and when. So another tip that you can do is have your child have a day, so you can alternate it on the calendar. You know, Monday is child one and Tuesday is child two, yeah. So that's their turn for first pick at, you know, the cookie jar, or right. You know, their turn to choose the game if it's, you know, if they're fighting over games, whatever they fight over,
yeah.
There's no fighting if Monday's your day and Tuesday's your day and Wednesday's your day and Thursday's your day and Friday is voting day, you know, so they have a sense that they have something that's theirs. They're not going to fight about it, who sits in which seat or blah blah blah,
yeah.
And you can kind of plan it out as a schedule and just eliminate that from the equation.
Nice. We do that on vacation sometimes. Today's your day to hit the buttons on the elevator.
There you go.
Tomorrow will be his day to hit the buttons on the elevator.
It's great.
Otherwise, every elevator ride's a battle.
But how, I mean, you have then, I think, an issue of when one child starts to lord over the other. You know, it's
right.
Like, oh, no, today is my day. How would you handle that?
Well, I think, you know, you do have to have a certain number of standing rules in the house, just like you have no hitting and no punching. You know, words hurt, too. So, you know, just as you would enforce if one child bit another, you also say no name calling, mm-hmm. you know, and no teasing or taunting, because that's a form of bullying. And I think I mentioned this before, mm-hmm. in my classroom model. If you're a school teacher and you observe, you know, this kind of taunting in your classroom, would you tolerate it? No. So you don't tolerate it at home either. It's just one of your rules of your house.
Do you see that older parents treat older kids differently than younger kids a lot when it comes to civil arriving? Or maybe you guys have that experience. Like, I feel like we ask more of our older, more concessions. Like, I know it's totally not fair on you, but you're going to need to let him happen.
It happens naturally just because he is able to do more. But then, you know,
I feel bad.
No, but then, you know what? That's okay, because what's great about it is if you can, as a parent, also build in some things, that some privileges that are unique to him for being the oldest, so he can feel special. Like, look, okay, I have to give for my younger brothers on X, Y, and Z. But they aren't allowed to stay up late once a week for late night. And they aren't allowed to go to such and such with daddy because that's only for me. So something that makes him feel unique and special about being the oldest, that can kind of make help the payoff a little bit.
My friend was just telling me that she deals with her oldest daughter, who's, I think, 4 years older than her son, 9 and 5, I think, that when she does get mad that something's, you know, not the same. And she'll, all right, you want equal? I can make everything equal, but there are times where you get bigger portions or I let you, so it's...
Yeah, and with an older child, I mean, the older they get, you can talk about fair and equality and that they're not really the same thing. You can never be equal. Nothing will ever be equal. You are actually going to get more privileges sooner than your younger brothers.
Right.
Is that equal? No. But is it fair? Yes, because you're the biggest.
But then I hear...
How would you handle your middle child? I mean, I feel bad sometimes because she, she gets clothes that my older child has worn before, and yet she's not the baby of the family. So sometimes I feel bad for her, and I don't really know, how to make her feel as important as the other two beyond, we love you, you're special. I don't know how to make her feel like her place in the family is just as important as the other two.
Right. Well, I mean, I think, it depends on the individual child, but you probably know your middle child better than anybody. And you can probably tell me, you won't have time here, but what her specific talents and strengths are and how her specific talents and strengths are different from her siblings. And that is going to really be a great avenue for you to, spend a lot of time and attention with, whether it be she's the best, bike rider of them all, or she's the best singer of them all, or she's the best gymnast of them all, or she's really great at cooking with mommy, something that makes her unique, and really just develop that as something that she's interested in and proud of and that she can have self-confidence with, and teach the others, both the older one and the younger one, because that's her niche.
I think our middle one is in a unique position, a special one, because he gets to have a close relationship with the older one and the younger, based on our spacing. But, they're in a unique position to get pulled up to their older brother, but also then get pulled down to the younger one, too.
Yeah. I mean, they do get these are the kids that, in research end up being the most flexible of all the birth orders and able to get along with more people. Their social skills are often the highest, best developed.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, we covered off on a lot, and hopefully we covered off on everyone's questions. Any more coming in from Twitter and Facebook? That was great to get some of those, so thanks so much for participating. And thanks so much for the conversation again, Dr. Pontillo. Great to have you in. Thanks to Lori and Cecile for being in studio as well. For more information about sibling rivalry or for more information about any of our panelists, visit the episode page on our website. We're actually going to continue the conversation briefly for members of our Parent Savers Club. After the show, Dr. Pontillo is going to tell us about sibling rivalry with, wait for it, twins. Sunny, make sure to stay tuned for that one. For more information about the Parent Savers Club, visit our website, parentsavers.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Listener Jenna from Texas asks a question via email. She writes, "My son has been diagnosed with PDD-NOS last summer. He is delayed in speech and has sensory issues. My husband is having a really hard time with this. Why is it so hard for men to accept the diagnosis for their own child? He has blamed me and my side of the family for our son's special needs, but there's no evidence. What's the best way to handle this situation?"
Hi, Jenna. My name is Dr. Dan Singley, and I'm a clinical psychologist specializing in men's issues, in particular, new fatherhood. The first thing I would say is you didn't say how old your child is, and so that draws to bear on the validity of the diagnosis. I can't armchair somebody else, but PDD NOS, or pervasive developmental disorder not otherwise specified, is in a sense a catch-all for some developmental clusters of developmental delays, and that may or may not stick. Having delayed speech may get caught up in having sensory issues as well. There's a lot of high-quality occupational therapy that can help a child to develop a more balanced sensory diet. But that aside, the quick answer to your question is that mental health stigma abounds, and men, very commonly, when they feel really painful emotions like shame, fear, regret, rather than connecting with them as such, they'll come along with other feelings that they're more comfortable expressing, like anger, frustration, and irritation. And going on the blame game is really likely to be a manifestation of that kind of reaction, a way to keep away from the much more threatening feelings about, well, geez, this isn't what it looks like in the Hollywood movies, and what's my life as a father of a special needs child going to be, which can be a fairly threatening issue to deal with. What I would suggest is to just bring that recognition with you, and if it's playing out where you're having difficulties in your relationship, of course get couples counseling to see about developing some communication skills to work through those concerns. The other is, and he's very unlikely to want to do this, is my guess, but if there are groups or information about fathers of kids that do have special needs, to see about connecting your husband with them, or you going and checking them out to see what sorts of resources or information there are, because you're certainly not the first person to be in this situation. I appreciate you calling in. It's a thoughtful question, and I wish you all the best.
That wraps it up for today's episode of Parent Savers, actually for the second part of our two-part Parent Savers series. If you didn't check out the first one, go back and listen to the episode about preparing for another baby. Next week, we'll be talking about healthy eating strategies, so join us for that too. We appreciate you listening to Parent Savers, and don't forget to check out our sister show, Preggy Pals, for expecting parents, and our show, The Boob Group, for moms who breastfeed their babies. This is Parent Savers, empowering new parents.
This has been a New Mommy Media production. The information and material contained in this episode are presented for educational purposes only. Statements and opinions expressed in this episode are not necessarily those of New Mommy Media and should not be considered facts. While such information and materials are believed to be accurate, it is not intended to replace or substitute for professional medical advice or care, and should not be used for diagnosing or treating healthcare problem or disease or prescribing any medication. If you have questions or concerns regarding your physical or mental health or the health of your baby, please seek assistance from a qualified healthcare provider.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, mamas. Don't forget to check out Mighty Moms. It's our online community built for new moms just like you. Not only can you connect with other moms, but you can also join us backstage for special mom-only online events. And you'll also be notified when we're recording so you can join us as a special guest. Visit our website, newmommymedia.com, and click on the Mighty Moms banner. It's free. That's newmommymedia.com. See you there.